Welcome to episode 1274 of The Sleeper and the Bust. I am Justin Mason, joined as always on Sundays by Jason Collette. How you doing, my friend?
I am back from New York City. Last trip. I am back. It was a little colder than it was for Tout Wars weekend.
Insanely cold.
Decidedly colder.
Yeah. It was literally 70 degrees the weekend I was there. And then I saw like the following Thursday, or maybe it was the following Wednesday, it was snowing.
It was, I didn't see snow, but it was great because it was, I got there Thursday and was able to see, had lunch with our friend Corey Schwartz from MLB, got to see a behind the scenes tour of the office, the offices there. Just amazing. The replay center. Now that I've seen the replay center, I'm probably going to be even more agitated when they blow replay calls. I'm like, as I told somebody else, you could literally count the nose hairs coming out of an old catcher's nose on the screen. And the fact that they still make some of these replay calls wrong after looking at those views, I'm going to be less intolerant of this. And then, I spent later that day with Eno and DVR down at Other Half and Ryan, who makes awesome sandwiches. Man, that was good. And so spent some time there, and then I spent the rest of the trip with the Moneyball folks. So we had a pregame event at T-Squared Social, and then went and did the Moneyball auction on all day Friday, which was awesome as always. This is the 10th year I've had the pleasure of working with those guys, and we got done. I thought the great thing, we started at 9-ish, finished right before 5. That's everything. 13 team mixed league, 4 round reserves. We stopped for lunch and different things. And it was, and there was no repeats. Nobody threw a guy out that said, take, I didn't have to say taken. There's always that thing, but I mean, hell, it even happened in Tout a couple of times. And in this league did not happen. I was like, we've arrived. We have absolutely arrived at things that are just a well-oiled machine now between returning owners and just everybody familiar with the process. So it was it's great to be home, and I brought some cold back with me. So how about you?
Yeah, I had my main event last night. I think it went fairly well.
You didn't take 9 straight hitters, did you?
I did not. I did take a lot of hitters. My pitching is a little bit weaker than maybe it probably should be in the middle, but that is in large part because I was gifted Tarik Skubal in the 3rd round, which was his max pick in the mains over the last week. So I was I started off with Tatis, got Pablo Lopez in the 2nd, and then, like I said, gifted Tarik Skubal in the 3rd. I felt really, really good about the start of my draft. Definitely had a little bumps in the middle, but I feel overall pretty good about it. Might be a little bit light on power, might be a little bit light on kind of the middle tiers of starting pitching, but ultimately,
I think a good team. Reliever?
I took Josh Hader in the 4th.
Oh, wow. So you went hitter, 3 pitchers, and then you went heavy hitting from there, I'm guessing?
Yeah, pretty much. So, you can check out the whole YouTube thing. I've got the link on Fangraphs with the full board. Today I'm doing my $1,500 auctions. So ooh. I'm going to record with you. Then I'm going to go record over for RotoWire on with Eric Halterman. And then I'm going to do a $1,500 auction this afternoon. Nice. So
I have a $100 auction after we get to the recording today. 18 team mixed OBP league. I like my team. Oh, nice. There's also a team in this league that's got Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker. It's ridiculous. I looked at it. I was like, how did all these guys, Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker, and some other monster. I'm just like, Jordan Alvarez. These guys are all on the same team. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to win OBP. Don't need to. But I got that that later today.
Nice. Well, today we are going to be talking preseason predictions. We're going to go through the divisions, the playoff teams, and then some award winners. Just kind of a way to kind of kick off the season. Season starts on Thursday. I'm debating just taking Thursday off of work so I can just watch games all day and not have to worry about doing any sort of actual work myself. So but we'll see. So let's just kick it right off with some news before we jump into all of that. And we're going to start with Jackson Holliday getting optioned down to the minors. A little bit surprising. I really thought that the Orioles were going to let him break camp and be their opening day second baseman. Apparently, Colton Wong is going to fill that role.
No, he's not. He got released this morning.
Oh, okay. I guess Jordan Westberg is going to fill that role. are you stashing Jackson Holliday in any leagues?
You know, it obviously impacts his value. I mean, you want to hope that it's just one of these things where it's a service time manipulation that isn't a service time manipulation thing. I'm selfishly looking. I'm like, when is Norfolk? Norfolk's already probably going to win the AAA championship. Their team is ridiculous. I would love to see when it's stupid MILB site. Oh, man, this site is miserable. But I wanted to see when they were coming, when Norfolk's coming to Charlotte, but it's gonna impact things, and I'm not even gonna look. This site's so ridiculous. So it's gonna impact his value a little bit. I mentioned this with Eric and Todd yesterday on the SiriusXM show. All the opportunities I've had to get Jackson Holliday, I haven't taken them yet. Now Wyatt Langford came to me twice. And these are typically not the guys I target. I'm usually leaning towards, I want guys with established major league experience anyhow, but Wyatt Langford came to me in the 12th round, two different times. And it was because in both of these drafts, the run on outfielders just happened. And I was looking at it going, maybe this is the year I'll take a chance. So I took Wyatt Langford twice in the 12th round. Now I feel a lot better about that with him making the opening day spot. But with Holliday, I have continued to pass. And it wasn't because I thought the Baltimore was going to do this. It was more about I liked the player depth at that, and I'd lean towards the safety of that versus running for taking the upside chance with Holliday. And maybe this truly is about him getting more reps at second base for things, but maybe it isn't. I don't know. I like I said, I will continue to pass. I won't be drafting him this weekend.
Yeah, I think I got Holliday maybe in one league, but I can't imagine he ends up on any more of my teams. I got three more drafts or two auctions and one more draft. And I'm not a big fan of stashing guys in general, though I did stash Garrett Cole yesterday in my main event, which Paul got very upset about. I figure 15th round Garrett Cole wasn't that bad of a stash. So, yeah, I just don't love stashing these guys. You never know when they're going to be up. And you really just don't know how well these guys are going to translate early on in their career. We've seen plenty of guys who turned out to be MLB stars, but that struggled with the transition to the major leagues. So,
right.
I think he's going to be up early. My guess is, you know, end of April, but that's a long time to stash a guy, especially if you don't have like an NA slot where you can, you know, not affect your bench or your IL spot. So, Victor Scott, the second optioned as well. A lot of people getting really excited about him as potentially being a guy who could be impactful for fantasy. I'm assuming if you're not stashing Jackson Holliday, you're not stashing Victor Scott the second.
That's right. I have not had him on a roster yet. So I probably won't either. It just kind of confusing with this one is like they're giving Dylan Carlson the early time, and that's why Victor Scott got sent down. And you can say that Dylan Carlson's having a spring. Like if you look at the numbers, oh, he's at 271, 327, 521 this spring. He's got three home runs and 13 RBIs. He's 25 years old. So we can't totally write off Dylan Carlson and be like, it's a bust type of situation. But other than that, like he's striking out 27% of the time this spring, which is more than he has struck out since his rookie year of COVID back then. So it's like the numbers, you know, he's got some numbers there, but what is it at what cost is this coming at? I don't know how long this stays. Scott and Holliday could both be up around the same time. I don't know how long this Dylan Carlson magic lasts with this, but I was kind of surprised that they are. I get it because he's young, but I'm surprised that they are like, yep, he's our center fielder because they've been down this road before and got nothing out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little surprised. I mean, I'm not that surprised. I mean, Victor Scott, I think, still has some kind of maturing to do in the minors. But, like, to go with Dylan Carlson, that's a choice. I mean, I think I've been pretty outspoken and adamant that I don't think Dylan Carlson is a major league player either. So, I mean, I guess they're just trying to hold the spot until either Lars Nootbaar or Tommy Edman comes back from injury. But Nootbaar's going to be out for a while with broken ribs, and there's no real timetable for Edman yet. So I wouldn't be surprised if Victor Scott comes up to the majors, especially if Dylan Carlson can't hold his own at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, you know, I look at Alec Burleson, and Alec Burleson's never been somebody that's completely impressed me, but he's now he's having a hellacious spring. Alec Burleson's walked twice as often as he struck out. He's hitting 372. Like, he's had a really good spring at the plate. And so, you know, they want to have him as a strong side platoon left fielder for now. And so I get that. He's had some minor league pedigree of what he's been able to do. Last year was a bit, you know, he spent some time on the major league roster. Wasn't that great, but Burleson has certainly earned his time on the roster this spring so far. We'll see how this all shakes out. But like you said, once Edman, once Nootbaar, once these guys come back, they have an air traffic control problem in the outfield.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about kind of our main topic for the day, which is our preseason predictions. Let's start with the division winners, and let's start in your home division of the AL East. I assume you're taking the Rays.
I am not. Oh, okay. I'll even go this far. I don't even have the Rays making the playoffs this year. I have level set my expectations for about an 85-win season when it's all said and done. I would love to be wrong, honestly, but I don't even have them making the playoffs this year. That's just where I am with the club this year. But I am not taking them. I actually have Toronto winning the AL East this year, and my reasoning is this team is way too talented to underperform as much as they did again as they last year. And really what it came down to last year is Toronto excelled at getting people on base last year, but they were dog shit. I mean, the worst team in the league in driving those guys in last year. That there's no year-to-year stickiness over that, but there's no way that team could be that bad and leave that much traffic on the bases as they did last year. And so if they can just drive in 20% more of those runs, they would be there. So as bad as they were last year, they were still in playoff contention. And like I said, the team is too talented. I like their bullpen, Romano's issues aside right now. I really like their bullpen. I like what they have for pitching, and I like the overall talent core of that team. I think, you know, I know you and I are both on the Dalton Varsho improvement bandwagon this year with that. So I like the Jays to win this division. It's not going to be just, they're not going to have that dominate team with things. And Baltimore, like I said, as great as or as poorly as Toronto did driving folks in last year, I expect Baltimore to take a step back this year only because, you know, their 100 win season felt like 13 to 14 of those wins were by the skin of their teeth. And yeah, that's tough to do year over year type of thing. So when a team takes a giant step forward, as Baltimore did, you see him take a backslide. I mentioned a few times during the season, you know, the 2020 Orioles reminded me of the 2008 Rays, where they were a year ahead of things. And then you go back and look at what the 2009 team did, where everybody was like, oh, this team's going to be it. They're going to take that step forward. And that 2009 team took that back step before they then took that other step forward in 2010 and 2011 with that. So that's where I see the Orioles this year. And that's why I have the Jays going in over the Orioles as the AL East champs this year.
Well, I like the Jays as well, but I don't like them to win the division. I'm sticking with the Orioles. Team won 101 games. Yes, maybe they take
Mullins
a little
homer. Mullins homer.
Yeah, I guess it is. But, like, not only is this team, like, just really, really good from top to bottom, they've got a lot of tradable assets, right? They're going to get Jackson Holliday. Yeah, they're going to get Jackson Holliday at some point. By the time we get to the trade deadline, I think that, you know, the ownership situation will be figured out and they can make some big moves at the deadline to kind of revamp the rotation, maybe add to the bullpen, maybe even add another big bat. And I just think that this team is set up so well for a really, really good deep run. I almost picked them to win the World Series. But spoiler alert, I did not pick them to win the World Series. So
I'm looking at the trade deadline though, real quick before we go, because this may come up others. You know, when you look at the trade deadline, here are some of the bigger names that are free agents after this season. Juan Soto obviously would lead that pack. Cody Bellinger, if he decides to opt out, but then again, he's playing for the Cubs. which we expect to be a contending team. So unlikely they're going to trade him. Teoscar Hernandez, apply the same argument. Marcelo Zuna has a club option. Mitch Haniger has a player option. JD Martinez, you know, he's if the Mets thing doesn't work out, that's it for hitting. Not that they need hitting, but that's what I'm looking at for the hitters. All right, that's just outfielders. Hell, I wasn't even looking at all the bats. I guess it had a something. So Paul Goldschmidt's an unrestricted free agent after this year. But again, we're talking about positions this club really doesn't need. Or if they want to go out and get, Pete Alonso, if they want to go that direction, if the Mets can't do that, you take, maybe they don't need it, but if Pete Alonso's out in the market, you make it work. And then if you look at pitching, because everybody always needs pitching, Max Scherzer, but a contending team. Blake Snell, if the Giants want, there's the opt-out there. But there's not a lot of pitching solutions that are out there that people are going to move. And they already made the biggest acquisition there with Corbin Burns. And I'm just trying to look down the list of if they're going to do a trade deadline move, it's going to be for a guy with multiple years of control, because in these walk year type candidates, it's not a great class for that.
They just have a lot of firepower in that system to go out and get someone. I think they will. And I do think that they hold on for the second year and win the AL East. Let's move on to the AL Central. Who do you got?
I have the Twins and on it, but I will say this. It's probably my least confident pick of all of them, because I truly feel that this division is about as flat as any division in baseball. And four of the five teams could be in this argument. The White Sox, when I say flat, everybody's got a foundation. The White Sox are that foundation where all these teams are going to be able to bank wins against that crappy team. But the other four, I can make an argument for any of them. But the Twins are the ones I went with because they do have the deepest overall roster. But that said, this is the least confident I have in any one of the picks.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the most difficult division to pick. I've been big on the Royals all offseason as a team that I really like the moves they made. I like their lineup pretty close to top to bottom. And that rotation is much better than it has been. And they even added to the bullpen. So I'm going to stick with my team who I've been calling the dark horse of this division and say that the Royals win the division and make the playoffs. But I do not think that there's another team coming out of this division to get a wild card spot. I think you got to win the division.
And I disagree with you on, man. We'll get there.
I think we both have the same team for the AL West to win. So maybe this is a little bit easier. It is a good division. Who you got?
Houston. And really this all started when Joe Espada rearranged the lineup, when he's going to have Altuve and Tucker and Bregman and Yordan. And then, just restructuring the lineup really put it over the top for me, because how long have we been begging for Kyle Tucker to move up in the lineup? And now Kyle Tucker's going to move up. The structure of that, they've got some different pitching options there. They added Hader in the bullpen, and Presley is probably the best setup man in the game now. And so they have all the skills in that. And they still, despite their struggles last year, still almost overtook Texas in that situation. Or no, they did. I'm sorry. They did overtake Texas. They lost in the playoffs. The Astros roster is just, they're still there. They got one more year of this. Bregman's probably gone after this year. And they have one more year to do this. And I like the strength of this team. Texas is obviously going to have some issues putting together a healthy rotation here. The front half of the season, they just added Michael Lorenzen. They got Cody Bradford in the rotation. I expect a little bit of a back step from them, but Houston to me is the team to beat in the AL West.
Yeah, I just think the number of injuries that Texas has to start the season may just put them a little bit behind the eight ball. I wouldn't be surprised if Texas pulled it out, or even Seattle, they didn't necessarily get a ton better, but they didn't get worse either. But ultimately, I think Houston is the best team in this division, and I'm going to give it to them as long as they can figure out keeping that rotation healthy, which has already been a little bit of a problem so far this year. So I think this is going to be a really competitive division, but I did go with the Houston Astros as well. Let's move it on over to the NL, start with the East, where we both have different teams. Who you got?
We do. I put the Phillies down because I mean, it's going to be a slugfest between the Phillies and Atlanta all year long. And last year, Atlanta obviously got the best of them in the regular season, but Philadelphia turned that around in the postseason with that. I just like the Philadelphia team almost top to bottom. I love how they've turned around what used to be their biggest weakness in defense and have made it a strength. I love this bullpen almost top to bottom, all the different options they have. And the lineup, 1-9, is almost fantastic. So I love all the options here. I think, and obviously this is no slight against Atlanta at all, but you know, Atlanta enjoyed an extreme amount of health last year. When you look at what that offense is able to do, just about everybody, unless I'm missing somebody, was there just about every day, all season. And I got to bake in some of that. Something's got to slip there. I'm not talking like Philly runs away with this division. I would be stunned if it didn't come into the final weekend, but I'm going to give Philly the edge here.
Yeah, I'm still going with the Braves. I just think they're a little bit better kind of top to bottom. I think both teams are really, really good. I do think it's going to be a really close race. I don't think the Phillies are going to fall out of it like they did towards the end of last season. But I think ultimately you got the best player, on this team in baseball in Ronald Acuna. I know people are going to be yelling at me, it's Shohei Ohtani. But Ohtani without the pitching is not the best player in baseball. So next year he'll be back to being the best player in baseball. But I just think the Braves are too good. And I think that they're going to end up winning this division. And I'm going to expect them to go deep into the playoffs, as we'll talk about here in a little bit. Let's go to another division where, again, we have different picks. So, but again, this is a wide open division.
Yeah, how boring would it be if we just agreed on everything, right?
Yeah.
The flatness of the division applies to the both Centrals, but I would say this Central doesn't have, the NL Central doesn't have that easy foundation of we're just going to win a bunch of games against one team like the AL Central does. But for here, when in the mix of uncertainty, try to find this year's breakout team. And for me, that was Pittsburgh here. We have O'Neill Cruz back, who's been awesome this spring. You look at the thickness of this lineup with Cruz, with Reynolds, with Cabrian Hayes, with Sawinski at the top. Eno made a point at the Rates and Barrels this week. Like one of his bold predictions was the Pirates have the best left side of the infield in baseball by war. And it's like, you look at it like Cabrian Hayes with his awesome defense and what he's done with O'Neill Cruz. It was a fun point to have in pitching staff. We saw Mitch Keller take that step forward. We have Jared Jones in the periphery. Paul Skeens will be up at some point. Their bullpen's got some nice depth to it. And so I look at this and it's like, who could be this year's Orioles? Who could be that team that could take that step forward? And to me, Pittsburgh has the pieces and the circumstances in their division to be a surprise.
Yeah, I like Pittsburgh, but this division is just so jumbled. Like, honestly, I think pretty much every team in the division has a shot. But to me, I still think the best team in the division is the Cubs. I really like their lineup after they brought back Cody Bellinger. I think they've got a lot of depth in this rotation. The bullpen is really, really good. And so I'm going to go with the Cubs tentatively. Obviously, you guys can't see the sheet we're working off of, but I have changed my wild card picks to include multiple different NL Central teams. I think a lot of these teams are going to be very competitive. I think the Reds are really good. I think the Pirates are really good. I think the Brewers are still good. And I would not be surprised if any team won this division, but I'm going with the Cubs here.
So. Yeah, I would say the only thing I can't get behind the Brewers. I love the offense. I love the upside, but that pitching is horrendous. Yeah. It really is bad as a whole. And that's where they're going to have to win games with that offense. And that's what scares me because, the pitching's got to do some part of it and they got to carry some water in that load. But it wouldn't surprise me if Milwaukee's last play, which would stink because they've got a nice young core talent, but not on the pitching.
And I think things are probably going to get worse there because once they do deem that they're out of it, I think they're going to probably blow up, any of their kind of tradable pieces. So maybe Christian Yelich ends up in
Baltimore. And Adamas. Adamas is in his walk here.
So, Milwaukee's rotation. When you're starting your year's rotation with Colin Ray as your two, Jacob Junis as your three, and Joe Ross as your four. Like, that is, that's pretty gross. I just can't do that. So, I mean, I don't want to count the Brewers out of it necessarily, but I'm pretty close to counting.
They're going to be a fun team to watch offensively. I could see them in motion quite a bit. That's where I could see some things moving along, but yeah, otherwise it's the pitching is that's when you go and change the channel, watch something else and hope you don't tune back in and see four runs tacked on the scoreboard.
Absolutely. All right. I think the NL West is probably the easiest division to pick. We both have the Dodgers. I'm assuming you have the Dodgers.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of like having the number one overall pick in a draft. And like, do I take Acuna or somebody else?
Yeah.
And maybe the gap between Acuna and Strider, depending on how you want to make your team build, has shortened a little bit. But let's be real. There's a standard deviation between the Dodgers and any other team in this division.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to double check it, but I'm pretty sure no team in the NFBC main event has even taken anybody but Acuna, at least going
people
into
the talk draft. About it, but when given the opportunity, they're like, I don't know. It's
like, I mean, there were a ton of main events yesterday, so there definitely could have been someone. Nope, not a single person took anybody but Acuna so far in the NFBC main event.
Which and Paul's got a first overall in the main event this Wednesday, and I'm sure
he's going to take Acuna
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, yeah, I'm taking the Dodgers. I just think they're the best team, you know, probably in baseball. I just think it's just too difficult for even the Diamondbacks. I think they're really interesting. The Giants got better this offseason and could be more competitive. I still think the Padres are pretty good, but I don't think any one of them are close to being as good as the Dodgers right now. So, all right, let's talk about our wild card winners and who we think we're going to sneak their way into the playoffs via the wild card. Who are your three guys in the NL?
I mean, Atlanta's a given. If they're not going to win the division, they have to get in. They don't really need to talk about them. Then I also have the Cubs. Like I said, it was which way am I going to go in the division? If I'm not going to pick the Cubs to win, they're in. And then I have to suck up to the host and be like, oh, I got to put the Giants in. But in all seriousness, with the Dodgers are going to win a whole bunch of games. But when you look at everything else, I like what the Dodgers did in the short term, adding Soler, adding Chapman, adding Snell. They're going to get Alex Cobb back a little quicker than expected. They've got the great defense up the middle. I like what the Giants have done overall, and I feel like they should be an 88 to 90 win team this year. I have not looked at projections and see what they have, but I like the different pieces that they've added. They're going to have an influx. I've mentioned this a couple times this winter, you know, taking out Gabe Kapler and putting in Melvin. Yes. Bob Melvin likes to run. That's something the Giants did not do last year. I thought they wasted the opportunities. Like, hey, here's all these new rules and let's not run. They have guys that can move on this team, and I would like to see how they're going to put all those pieces together this year. But I'd like the overall depth of this, and I like that, you know, with the pitching staff, the way it's going to be. Adding Snell was a much needed thing. The bullpen still has its strengths, and I think this is a team that's going to win that last wild card spot.
Yeah, I'm not very.
So you're like on the Giants that I am with the Rays.
Yeah,
is that what I'm hearing?
I still don't think they're. They may be the third best team in this division. I don't think they're the second best team in this division. I still think the Diamondbacks are above them. And I think there's arguments that if the Padres, you know, don't have the the bad fortune that they had last year, that they should be better than the Giants as well. So far, at least the FanGraphs odds of the Giants making the playoffs are at 44.4%. So
not almost, terrible.
Yeah, almost a coin flip. So that's not bad.
Don't bet $4.5 million on any of these predictions, guys. We're not here to bail you out. We're not wire transferring anything.
Yeah. Not at all. My National League wild cards, and I've changed this multiple times since we started
recording. I know. I've seen them go over.
The one I feel the most confident about is the Phillies. I think they're definitely going to be in the playoffs. I think, like you said, you think they're going to win the division. I think they're going to fall just short of that division title, but I think the Phillies are really good. The Pirates and the Reds are my other two. I'm going to take three teams in the NL Central to make the playoffs. I just think that they're both the Pirates and the Reds are really young, fun teams with a fair amount of depth. I know the Reds have been hit by some injuries and suspensions earlier this offseason, so I almost had them as a like kind of last team out with the Diamondbacks getting in. But I'm a little worried about the Diamondbacks' rotation after losing Eduardo Rodriguez. I just think that that is actually kind of a brutal kind of pull for them. So I'm going to go with the Reds over them, and I agree with you on the Pirates. I think the Pirates are actually pretty good, and I think they're going to make the playoffs for the first time in a while. So I'm with you on that one. Let's move on over to the AL wild card. Who you got?
Let's see. And I noticed, you know, this may come as a surprise. I'd have nobody from the AL East making that. AL wild card, I have what I put down. I put Seattle for one of them because I love their pitching. Top to bottom, love their pitching. And that's what's going to make or break this team. The offense, again, they had their own struggles last year with things, and they can't be as bad as they could be in that situation. But I absolutely love their pitching, top to bottom this year. And it could be, and Bryce Miller's the guy I expect to take the biggest step forward there with that. Then I also have Texas. I don't see them completely sliding out of the playoff picture. But the offense is too good to drop out of it. And then finally, I have the Guardians in there. With the Guardians, you know, it's a new situation under Stephen Vogt with things, but I do love their pitching. I do love the young core of hitting that they have. And we've talked about the flatness of the AL Central, and somebody can, and that's where they may have the advantage over the teams in the East, because I would say the worst team in the AL East this year is likely going to be Boston. But they're still going to beat you up. Boston still has a good offense, and they're going to have Nick Pivetta and Cutter Crawford and pray for rain type of situation. The way I look at that pitching staff, but even the worst team in the AL East is still going to be able to beat you up. And that's why I think the Guardians have an advantage to get to slide into that wild card, that last wild card spot over a team in the East.
Yeah, that's, I think, a fair point. I do have an AL East team. I have the Blue Jays, your division winner, making the playoffs. I agree with you. I think they're too good. Kind of, especially in that lineup, to miss the playoffs. I don't think they're going to catch the Orioles, but I think they're definitely going to be in the playoffs. I'm also going to put the Rangers in there. I know the Rangers are going to have kind of a rough start to the season, but halfway through the season, they're going to get a bunch of guys back that should help this team win. And they have
a built-in trade deadline.
Yeah, exactly. they did some main event stashes as well, so. I think the Rangers get in, and then I think the Mariners get in as well. So Mariners, they're, you know, I think that they could have made bigger moves this offseason to kind of push them towards a division championship, but I do like some of the moves that they made this offseason, getting Mitch Garver, getting Polanco in order to kind of bolster that team. Yep. So I've got the Rangers, the Mariners, and the Blue Jays making the wild card. All right, who are you picking to win the National League?
Boring chalk. I don't know how, honestly, I don't know how anybody can go against the Dodgers outside of the Dodgers' track record in the postseason. You know, take away the COVID World Series, and they haven't done that in a long time. So that's what they have going against them. But this team's too scary on paper, and it just feels like they could go out and do something else if they wanted to, because they're this close and they can't waste that opportunity. Now, if this whole investigation thing all goes sideways, then this pick is garbage. But right now, I don't know how you take anybody but them.
Yeah, you become a Giants fan. That's how you take anybody but them, because I'm not taking the Dodgers to make it to the World Series. I'm taking the Braves. I think the Braves, while they are not as good necessarily on paper, line by line, I think they have a lot less risk in terms of the overall profile. And, you know, I love the Dodgers from like a straight numbers perspective, but like, you've got a rotation filled with guys who have injury issues, guys who are unproven in Bobby Miller and Yamamoto. And I worry that rotation is not going to hold up all year long. Now, obviously, they can go out and get, you know, pieces to replace things if they need it. But ultimately, I think that the safer bet, the better bet to kind of keep things more consistent is the Braves. So I'm going to take the Braves to win the National League.
Quick, I wanted to ask about Yamamoto, because I didn't know if you and Paul recorded on Friday, because I was with mm-hmm. Eno and DVR on Thursday, and we were watching the one inning of Yamamoto on replay at other half, because I saw it at the airport Thursday morning. And what were your impressions if you got to see that inning? Because I know it was on at like 3 o'clock in the morning your time, or if you watched it. But I'm curious about what you thought about Yamamoto before I talk about what I saw.
I did not see it live because I was not going to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch.
You would just still be up.
I went to bed. I set a DFS lineup at like 1:30 and then I went to bed. So, and that DFS lineup did not do very good. My impression was I felt like the pitches were fine and that he just missed his spot a little bit. And I'm not overly worried about Yamamoto in general. I think, you know, we've seen him drop in drafts since then, which is understandable because people are like, well, I can't use him for that first start now. But whatever, it's one start out of 32. Like, I just don't think it's a big deal. I'm still not going to end up with Yamamoto just because I think the transition from, you know, the Japanese leagues to MLB can be a little bit difficult for a lot of guys. And I kind of want to, you know, see more. But ultimately, I don't think that, like, he necessarily looked bad. I think he just kind of missed some spots and got tagged for it.
Yeah, I mean, what I saw, I felt like he, and they even mentioned this on the broadcast, like he was overthrowing a bit. There were two, the if you want to go back, go back and watch the Jurickson Profar at bat. He threw two cutters in that at bat that were amazing. Jurickson Profar thought they were fastballs in her half. They were cutters, and he swung over the top of both. To me, they were the best two pitches he threw in the game. The first one, he threw 97 fastball right over the plate to Bogaerts, and Bogaerts took it right back up the middle for a single. And that was probably the only time he ever hit his location in that particular inning, because he was the splitter was honestly, you could have called it a spitter because nobody was swinging at it. It was just a ball out of his hand and nobody was doing anything. But the cutters that he threw to Profar is what I want to hang my hat on. Now, I have not drafted him anywhere yet. My concern is just him being part of that six-man rotation, and I don't want to spend – some people have been taking a late third or fourth round draft pick on a guy that may, you know, may lose a couple of starts over the course of a season because they give him an extra day's rest and whatnot. But I'm hanging my hat on what I saw from that cutter because that was an elite pitch, the way he executed those. But everything else from that inning would certainly be enough to scare me. And I could see, like, if he fell in main events this weekend or anybody sitting down to draft, you're like, ooh, I don't want to touch him. I can see there's enough in that one inning of almost 40 pitches to scare you off a little bit. But I would just say, as homework, go back and watch the at-bat against Profar and watch those cutters he executed, because those are things of beauty. And that's a tough pitch to do that with, but those were absolute things of beauty. I thought they were the two best pitches he threw in that outing.
Yeah, he has had a pretty wide range, and I think that's indicative to that bad start, because I think if he had pitched well in the first start, or just like pitched mediocrely, or hadn't pitched at all, right? The game just hadn't started. He would be a firm second rounder. He's gone as high as 24. But because of this bad start, he's gone as low as 55. So he's got a pretty wide range for a guy going that early.
So he's still hanging in the fourth round, though. I mean, that's my takeaway from that. He has not yet fallen out of the fourth round.
No, and I don't think he will. I think he's going to continue. I would be very, very surprised if he fell out of the fourth round. I know he went, I think, right at the turn, the 3-4 turn in my main.
Okay.
But
also, like, heavy pitching. Like, I've seen him go as high as like SP6, SP7. So we're also talking main event for, you know, those who aren't aware. Pitching tends to fly off the board early, and closers as well. And with the uncertainty of the closers market right now, with Duran down, with Romano dinged up. Who am I missing? I know there's like a third. Oh, Devin Williams. So it's like we've got some high-end relievers that have come off the market. And so some of those second-tier relievers are getting pushed up now too.
Yeah. He's currently the 10th starting pitcher off the board in main events. To me, that is just – it's. I understand it because there is kind of a gap. But, like, I can't take Yamamoto
over
Zach Gallen, Logan Webb, Aaron Nola, Logan Gilbert. I'm just not taking them over those guys.
Yeah, it's tough to get on board with the top 10 pick.
Yeah. Let's move on to our AL champ. Who you got?
I have Toronto. I'm going to ride that train as far as possible. And I, as I think back to this, I did this last year too. So they owe me, and I'm doing it again.
I took Toronto to win the World Series last year.
I think I did too. And surprise, spoiler alert, I'm doing it again this year.
I am not doing it again this year. I'm going to take their division mate. I'm going to take the Baltimore Orioles. Like I said, I think the Orioles are a very, very good team that's very young, but they also have movable assets to go and get kind of some extra help at the trade deadline. I just think this is a team that is going to continue to perform really, really well. Maybe they're just too young and inexperienced and they won't get there kind of like last year, but I'm going to bank on them this year to win the AL pennant, make it to the World Series, and then lose, because I have them losing to the Braves. I think the Braves win that series. I think the Braves are the World Series champs. Who are your World Series champs?
Jays, just go in there, again, and I'm ready to be disappointed yet again with them, but I'm going to go there. If I have them winning the AL, I have them winning it all, so I'm going to go with Toronto again, getting them their first World Series since 1993.
There you go. All right, let's move on to our award winners. Who do you have as the AL MVP?
All right, so I did all these back in the bold prediction days of January, December and January. So I have Alex Bregman as my MVP. And we talked about how we both have Houston high, talked about the restructuring of that lineup. Bregman's going to have, he's going to have Altuve, and he's going to have Tucker hitting in front of him. He's going to have Yordan hitting behind him. There's not a better insulated hitter in baseball. That's an envious spot to be in. He could drive in a ton of runs. He's also in a contract year, so he's got all that going on. He still has Minute Maid Park, and he gets to beat up on some Oakland pitching as well. Bregman's the MVP this year, and I love where I'm able to take him in drafts right now.
All right. I like that call. I'm going to go with a corner infielder, but I'm going to go back over to those Toronto Blue Jays, and I'm going to take Vlad Guerrero Jr. I know last year was down here, but like the underlying numbers are still so good. He's going to get another like 650, 700 plate appearances. He's going to hit for power. I think the batting average is going to come back up a little bit. And I just think that Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to prove a lot of the doubters wrong and turn back into an elite talent. And he's still so effing young. So give me Vlad Guerrero Jr. as my MVP in the American League. Who's your MVP in the National League?
My MVP is Trey Turner in the National League, but I don't have a lot of confidence in this pick because Philly still will not take Kyle Schwarber out of the leadoff spot. And that's what kills me with this. If I'm Philly and I had the ability to put a lineup together, I'm doing Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Real Muto, and Schwarber. Because I get why they don't want to have Harper and Schwarber together back to back in the lineup. You're worried about lefty coming in and maybe pitching around the righty and doing something like that. But if Trey Turner was hitting leadoff, he could steal 70 bases. I mean, he was perfect last year. And the problem is he gets on base behind Schwarber, and Schwarber's not running. And that's what hurts here. But if Turner was elevated just one more spot in the lineup and had free reign to steal second and even steal third, he could have a massive, massive season. It doesn't look like they're going to do anything with that right now. Still looks like Kyle Schwarber's going to hit leadoff. But if they just tweak that lineup, Kyle Tucker, Trey Turner is there. And I still like Trey Turner a ton this year to score a bunch of runs. And I'm still holding out hope that they make that change, put him at leadoff, and just let him run wild.
Yeah, I could definitely see it happening. My guy is Ronald Acuna Jr. It's the year of the juniors. Vlad Guerrero Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., I think Acuna just is the best player in baseball right now. So I know he got a little banged up with that knee issue earlier on in the season. Hopefully that doesn't become a problem again. But ultimately, I think he's just best player on the best team. I think the Braves are the best team in the National League. So I'm going to go with Acuna. All right. We have different picks for AL Cy Young. So who you got?
Framber Valdez Jr. I thought we were still in the junior thing. No, in all seriousness, plug your ears, Nick Pollock, because he and I, this is a running joke that we have between Reagan's and Framber, but I have taken Framber just about everywhere possible. The only reason I did not take him in AL Tout Wars this past weekend or 2 weekends ago was because Luis Castillo came up first, and he came up at a price that I like, so I wasn't going to pass something I like for something I wanted, especially in a room where everybody knows that I love Framber and could probably push the value up on him even higher with that. But remember, we still have a lot of voters that will vote on wins And we talked about the offense and the run support in Houston. All the conditions and the environment are ripe for Frander Valdez to repeat what he did in 2022, where he had 17 wins and a 2.82 ERA, made all 31 starts, pitched 201 innings. All of those conditions are still in play with him. And I feel that he is lined up very well to win a Cy Young this year.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good call. Unfortunately, I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to go with the guy you just talked about getting, and that's Luis Castillo. All the talk this offseason and draft season has been about George Kirby and been about Logan Gilbert and how high can they go? How good are they going to be? And like the guy who's not talked about is Luis Castillo. Luis Castillo is fantastic. It's a fantastic park. That team is really good. He's going to get a lot of wins. I think he is. He's my number three starting pitcher this year. So I just think that Luis Castillo is just going to have a baller year and win his first AL Cy Young. All right, let's move to National League. Who you got? Because I am shocked. I am unbelievably shocked by this call. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be because he's a former Ray, but tell us about your NL Cy Young.
Yeah, I'm going with the whole Blake Snell theory here. If Tyler Glasnow pitches more than 120 innings, he wins the Cy Young. That's honestly, we talked about the Dodgers, how awesome they could be. If Tyler Glasnow can just stay on the mound and even get to 145, 150 innings, they're going to be elite innings, and I feel that he's going to win the Cy Young. And I know the leap of faith here is him getting over 120 innings because he's never done that. Never. But if he's going to do it, he's back home. He's in his backyard. He's with a team that can manage it if they do the 6-day stuff. But to me, if he gets to 150 innings, something would have had to go seriously wrong for him not to have the wins, the ratios, the strikeouts to be in the front seat for the Cy Young.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but like, I can't buy that he's never thrown more than 120 innings, and I just can't buy that this is going to be the year. Maybe Dodgers Black Magic makes it happen, but I think he probably tops out at like 130, and then he's just not gonna pitch in enough games to get enough wins. You know how much those voters love their wins, which is why I'm gonna go with Zach Gallen is a horse. For some reason, people have just been sleeping on Zach Gallen this draft season. They don't
maybe it's my fault. I keep saying he's gonna wear it down. His workload jump was just way too high for my comfort level. And
a lot of people feel that way, but I just, to me, like that is projecting an injury on a guy who's just been a healthy horse. And I think he's going to get a lot of wins. I do think the Diamondbacks are going to be good, not good enough to make the playoffs, but good. And I think Zach Gallen is, he was the guy who, came close to winning Cy Young last year. I think he could win it again, or I think he could get the opportunity to win it this year. The other guy that I really considered was Zach Wheeler. I just think Wheeler is just such a good pitcher, and that Phillies team is going to be very, very good. Mm-hmm. So, but I ended up going with Gallen just because I am a Gallen gal. So let's finish out with Rookie of the Year. Start with the American League, where we both have the same guy.
Well, yeah, we both have Wyatt Langford. I'm curious to hear who else you considered for this spot. There's two names. So I considered Mason Miller only because I thought the Riders may want to throw Oakland a bone and be like, man, everything's gone so bad. But if this guy can come out and pitch to what his talents are capable of, this is somebody. But I also look strongly at Chase DeLauder with Cleveland. Langford, he's making the opening day roster. So that's a huge advantage right there. But Chase DeLauder was the other guy that I could see coming up and making an impact. But it's again, Langford's almost chalk here, almost chalk. Because if Holiday was up to start the season, would have gone that direction. But he's not. Langford's got the lead up on that because he is on the team to start the season. And there has been, I don't know where you stand on this, but I know some folks feel that Evan Carter may not be all that.
I agree. Yeah,
somebody's hung a Jeremy Hermita comp on him, and I'm like, but that. Well, that's a potential mean. For Evan Carter to step out. Yeah, when somebody said that, I wish I remember who to credit that to, but I was like, ouch, because I was on that Jeremy Hermita train for a long, 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 long time, and I finally had to drop it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Langford is the dude that is going to win it because he's getting that advantage of not only being up day one, but like being, he's going to be up day one in the middle of a really good lineup. Like it's just, and like he's done nothing to show that he is going to fail. I mean, obviously any prospect can fail or struggle in their first go around in the majors. I think there will be struggles, but ultimately like he looked good all the way through the minors. He's looked good in spring training. I don't know that there's any reason to think that he is not going to just be successful at the major level. Almost took him in my main event last night, in spite of the fact that I really don't like taking these kind of guys, but he felled me outside the top 100, or he almost felled me outside the top 100 picks. And even though I had three outfielders already at that point, I almost took a fourth just to get a share of Langford on a main event team. The guy I have as like a potential backup, Jackson Holliday, definitely would have been a name on the list. But the other guy that I've got is another guy who's had an amazing spring, is a top prospect. And people aren't talking about Colton Cowser. Colton Cowser is hitting 318, 434, 750 with 6 home runs and a stolen base in spring training. Austin Hayes got hurt yesterday, which could give Cowser a shot at some playing time early on in the season. And I think people are just over, you know, worried about like the small sample we saw in the majors last year. But this is a top 10 prospect that people are kind of sleeping on right now. So if I had to pick a dark horse, if I was going to Vegas and I went, I don't want to pick chalk on Rookie of the Year, I'd put some money on Colton Cowser to win AL Rookie of the Year.
And it's, you know, we can't really blame people for being asleep a little bit on anybody in Baltimore, because as we mentioned earlier, there are so many guys there to look at. It's like it kind of, you know, falls in the crack. I've said this to a few people. It's like they've got Connor Norby in the system. Connor Norby could probably be a starting middle infielder for about 10 teams in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
And he has no chance of sniffing that roster. And it feels like if they do any kind of trade, he's got to be in that package. Just where is he going to play? Type of situation. And he's a top 100 prospect or on the fringe of that. And he has no clear path, to any playing time in Baltimore. And they've already sent him down to Norfolk. And I'm just curious to see, you know, where he ends up in a deal. I thought if they did make a trade for Dylan Cease, that, I mean, it would have been perfect for the White Sox. Absolutely perfect. Not that they got a terrible return from what they got with the Padres, but again, just want to keep an eye on what Baltimore does this winter, because they certainly have the farm depth that you can only put so many of these guys on the 26 men roster.
Yep. All right, let's finish out with the NL Rookie of the Year. We have different picks this time as well. I'm glad we did this, because we both have different kind of viewpoints on a lot of the division winners and the award winners. So who is your guy to win the NL Rookie of the Year?
Oh, it's totally going to be Jacob Herdebees. And you guys, in all seriousness, somebody shared a tweet with me the other day that Phil Dussault has got Jacob Herdebees as somebody he's been targeting in late rounds. And I was like, cool, somebody a lot smarter than me is on board on the Herdebees train, because I've been like beating the drum on this guy. But in all seriousness, Jackson Chourio is where I want to go with this. And I want to tie this into a different point with spring steal. So last year I wrote the article about how teams run in the spring and how, and the league rather as a whole, and how that carries over to the regular season. I was looking at this particular data point this morning. Last year, Milwaukee had 26 stolen bases as a team in spring training, and the Angels, and I'll pull up the Angels and why I'm bringing them up in a second. They had 22. Well, both of those teams have new managers this year, Ron Washington with the Angels and Pat Murphy with Milwaukee. Those two teams are 1-2 in the league in stolen bases right now, with 43 steals for the Angels, which leads the league, and 42 for Milwaukee. So both of these teams under new managers are employing new styles here in the spring. And we already mentioned Milwaukee's going to have trouble preventing runs with pitching, so they have to generate them offensively, and Jackson Chourio could run wild and that's why I'm looking at that particular thing. And then not even on either one of these teams, because we've mentioned his name already in this podcast. Guess who leads all of baseball in stolen bases this spring?
Oh, someone we've mentioned on
and that we're both on board with this year.
I have no idea, honestly.
Dalton Varsho with 8.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Varsho has I got sniped on Varsho last night in my main event, and I'm so so annoyed by it. But
Dalton Varsho leads the league with 8 steals this spring. So I only wanted to bring this up because we have those two managers. And by the way, we mentioned Cleveland earlier with Stephen Vogt. Cleveland only has 26, so Vogt's not running that much this spring. But the Angels and Milwaukee are a lot more than they were last year. Just something to keep in mind. Another data point to keep in mind as you do your final draft stuff this week, that these teams may be some sleeper sources for stolen bases because they now have new managers that are trying out some things this spring.
All right. I'm going to take Yamamoto. I just think Yamamoto has such a leg up. As long as healthy and throws, you know, even just decent innings in terms of quality, like he's on a Dodgers team that's going to win a ton of games. And you know how much those voters love wins. You know, there's going to be a lot of hype around him. And I just think he's a really, really easy bet for NL Rookie of the Year. I don't think those guys should be eligible because they've been playing, you know, professional baseball in Japan, but they are eligible. And I think that's the easy answer.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for this episode. Jason, want to remind everybody where you reach on social media and plug anything you got going on.
So you find me Blue Sky Threads. Find me on Instagram, Jason Collette. Easy to do. I did post my recap of AL Tout Wars earlier this week, and that's outside the RotoWire paywall. So feel free to take the look at that. And just, you know, finally a call to action for everybody. With this, reach out to your best friend today. You know, I told Justin this before the podcast. One of my best friends passed away last night late. I got home from New York, went to dinner with the family, and got word last night from his brother that he passed away. One of my best friends, a guy I've known since I was a sophomore in high school. And it was like an uncle to my kids, was in my wedding. You know, he passed away in his sleep in the afternoon out of nowhere. So reach out because we were planning that. There's three of us that have been really tight since sophomores high school. We were planning a trip to Cleveland this year, this summer. And that was on my to-do list today to follow up on that, to finalize plans. And, you know, I wish I would have done it Friday or Saturday to see that, because we had texted earlier in the week, but we were supposed to wrap up things this weekend to make that plan. So reach out to your best friend, let them know you're thinking about them. And good luck with the rest of your drafts this week. I mean, we'll be recording. Well, next. Yeah. As long as you're good, I'm good for next week. I was thinking it's Easter, but you know, I don't know what your plans are, but I'm good pretty much every Sunday the rest of the way. I know I do have, I take that back. I have a draft on April 6th. I'm in one of those leagues that drafts super late. So I do have a draft on April 6th, that Sunday, that second Sunday or whatever it is. But I do have that particular thing, but you know, good luck on your drafts.
Thank you. I'll definitely be reaching out to my best friends this afternoon and just making sure they're doing okay, because I'm so sorry for your loss. I really am. You can reach me on social media, Justin Mason FWFB. I do have a bunch of drafts. I'm going to be live streaming all of them. I've got two $1,500 auctions, one today at 3 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, so 6 p.m. Eastern. And then one Wednesday evening at, I believe, 6 p.m.
Oh, I or have 9 GDD p.m. Eastern. Tomorrow night.
I'm not in GDD
today, and I have GDD tomorrow night.
There you go. And then I've got the Beach Justin Mason League, which is full. And that is at 10 o'clock Eastern. So if you like those live streams, you can catch the replays over on Fangraphs. I've got the links with the boards up there, so you can go and check that out. And then I'm writing three times a week this season at Fantasy Pros, 5 days a week at Fangraphs. That will do it for us. For Jason.
Hey, two quick bits of news.
Okay.
The Phillies have signed Matt Strom to an extension through 2025 with an option of 26. And then they traded Jake Cave to the Rockies, which may help their defense. And it's a nice addition by subtraction for the Phillies. I'm not sure. You know, trying to look at how that impacts their particular roster, but one of my Phillies friend just sent me those notes with that, and so I guess that solidifies Christian Pache's spot on the depth chart. But I didn't really see Jake Cave making the roster anyhow.
He was having a really good spring, and so I'm glad they sent him somewhere where he could find a home.
But so I wonder how that impacts. Well, if we like spin that the other direction, if he was having a really good spring, and who does that impact? Gives him a nice. Well, maybe that's why they outrighted Sam Hilliard, the Rockies did yesterday. So I put that. I mean, that gives Jake Cave a spot on the bench. So I'm obviously talking about NL.
It ended my boys Bradley Zimmer's chance of making the Rockies, which was yesterday he was the last man on that roster.
So yeah, they did outright Sam Hilliard, and that does give them some. I mean, the Rockies also traded for Greg Jones, who's a really good defensive center fielder. He's made the transition to center field. He used to be an infielder. He's made the transition to outfield, but Greg Jones has got some contact issues, and perhaps that's why. So like it gives him some chance for Greg Jones to work on his contact, and Jake Cave becomes the reserve outfielder behind Brenton Doyle, who's making some better contact this spring from what I read, saw.
Mm-hmm.
What I see about Brenton Doyle, because he's been somebody that I've been trying to pick up. Yeah, his strikeout rate's down to 25% this spring, which is a massive improvement for him. Massive.
And I want to say the swinging strike rate is like 12%. So
yeah, so he's there. So Nolan Jones also dinged up his knee yesterday. So there may be a path there for Jake Cave to get some early playing time should Nolan Jones need a couple of days. But yeah, be curious to see how this goes. I think this actually moves the needle a little bit in a mono league. If I had an NL-only league, Jake Cave is now on my radar, whereas he wouldn't have been 48 hours ago.
There you go. All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Jason, myself, thank you for listening, and have a great baseball season.
Thanks, guys.